This is the Well-Being Report on WDIY, discussing the vital conditions for health and well-being in the Lehigh Valley. Featuring WDIY's Margaret McConnell and Dr. Samantha Schock, Executive Director at the Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health. Now, here's Margaret and Samantha.
Good evening, and welcome to the Well-Being Report. This program is generously supported and co-hosted by our friends at the Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health. I'm your co-host, Margaret McConnell, Executive Director at WDIY. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Samantha Schock, the Executive Director of the Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health. Welcome.
Good evening.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And we've got new things this new year. If you've listened to this program in the past at this time, you are familiar with it being called Health Beat, not the Well-Being Report. So this is new for this year, and we feel that the renaming better describes the content that we've been discussing, in, at least in this last year.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to the new year and new season.
So as we're talking about well-being, what have you got on your plate for New Year's resolutions if you do them?
I feel like 2025 is going to be the year of well-being and trying to get back to. So I am a mom of two young girls and hoping to get back to me a little bit this year and reincorporate some physical activity or exercising where I can, and just trying to make sure that as much as I am taking care of them, I am taking care of myself as well. So that's my hope for this year.
That's good. Those are good lessons to teach your kids to take care of
yourself.
It's like, you know, when you're on the airplane, they tell you put the mask on yourself before your kids.
Yes.
And that seems so counterintuitive, but do have to take care of yourself.
It's always a challenge we have to work at, right?
Yes, yes. And I'm right there with you. I just listened to one of our podcasts, and it was about yoga, and I immediately signed up for my Saturday
classes.
There
you go.
So there
it's
you
kind
go.
Of motivation we need, right?
Yes. So, Sam, why don't you share a little bit about our reason for this renaming and this focus for the show going forward?
Absolutely. Before we jump in, I just want to say thank you to WDIY for the ongoing partnership over these last 3 years of Health Beat. We've had some fantastic conversations and guests and really highlighting health and how we're all working towards creating a healthier community here in the Lehigh Valley, and really looking forward to continuing that under the Well-Being Report. And we wanted to reframe it going into 2025 to really align with the way that we're thinking about health in the community, and framing it around the vital conditions framework, which is a way to think about the elements of a community that are needed for people to be able to thrive over time. So when we think about communities as a whole, they are systems and living organisms in their own right, and it is made up a bunch of different sectors and efforts and investments in health. And so how do we think about how those come together? The vital conditions really helps give us language around that. And so we wanted to orient the content, which kind of already was about those vital conditions, not about healthcare necessarily, but about health and the components of that. And we think that this will be a way to sort of lift that message up even higher.
Great. So within the vital conditions framework, why don't we start there and get people familiar with these terms? There are 7 different vital conditions. Yep. I'll rattle them off and then maybe we can dig into a few of them.
Sure.
So they're belonging and civic muscle, thriving natural world, basic needs for health and safety, humane housing, meaningful work and wealth, lifelong learning, and reliable transportation. So give us some examples of what falls under things like, I mean, humane housing seems pretty basic.
More straightforward.
We got
yes.
that one. Uh-huh. But what about meaningful work and wealth?
Sure. Yeah, so the vital conditions are the properties of places and institutions that we all need to be able to reach our full potential. So these are not descriptors of individual people, but descriptors of places, and thinking about how there is opportunities within a community to reach your full potential. And so things like basic needs for health and safety includes food access, healthy food access, basic healthcare needs, Whereas things like Meaningful Work and Wealth looks at how are we providing opportunities for people to have jobs that provide them the resources they need to live their lives. So workforce development falls into this bucket, for example. Programs that would be training programs to help people get jobs that are available to them in their local community and that pay enough for them to be able to afford their life. Lifelong learning looks at the education component. And so thinking about a cradle to a college or career trajectory, which we've often talked about on the show, starting from very early childhood and prenatally, making sure that we are supporting a healthy learning environment for children all the way through to adulthood. And then even in adulthood, as we continue to grow and change in our jobs and our careers, we know that that need for learning is always there. And so that bucket kind of incorporates everything that falls in that education component.
And that includes childcare, which is something we've talked about on this show in the past.
Absolutely. So childcare from an early childhood development standpoint, but also that then crosses over into that workforce development piece as well, as we ensure that we have enough quality childcare providers and safe spaces for our children to grow over time. So it is both, yes, the education component, and there is a piece there that will cross into that workforce development and the meaningful work and wealth.
Mm. And what about an example for belonging and civic muscle?
Belonging and civic muscle is the glue that keeps it all together, right? So we've talked a lot about how do you feel connected to a place? How do you feel connected to a community, whether that be geographically or through a shared interest or a shared school or whatever that may be? And so this idea of being connected to something larger than yourself, that you feel somehow a part of something, you feel like you belong somewhere. And that civic muscle piece is really how are we investing in the places that we live by voting and, you know, contributing and volunteering and all those things that we do to really engage with place. So that one really is the core of all of it.
Hmm. Okay. So all of these things work together to give that sense of belonging.
Yes. Yep. Right.
So where do these vital conditions come from? Who made them up? Who made them like a category, all of these categories? Who determines that?
Great question. I think the term that's been used a lot in the last couple of decades has been social determinants of health. And we've come to know that term as those things that impact health over time that are outside of the healthcare system. But within that, you really get a catch-all of things that are sort of urgent needs, things that people need immediately today in order to survive or to deal with a crisis. And then the vital conditions pushes us to think a little further about what are those things that we're doing and investing in the long term. So I would say it's an evolution of social determinants of health, not something new or different necessarily. We learned about it from our colleagues at the Ripple Foundation, and they worked on this organizing framework with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and others and shared it in 2017. And now since then, there's been a lot of uptake on this framework and thinking about how we're creating opportunities for thriving. So it's not just about making sure people have the things that they need to survive today, but really thrive over time. And now the federal government has actually supported this framework as well. And there are 25 federal agencies actively participating in the interagency work group developing the long-term recovery and resilience plan from COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And so they're thinking about how is their work across different agencies within the federal government connect? How are they building on one another? And then how are they thinking about these vital conditions in the long term? So it felt natural for us to sort of align with that as well, because it really gives a holistic picture that we can support as we think about all the components in a community that are needed for people to thrive. And it also helps connect across the healthcare system and the work that's happening in the community.
And this institute was formed out of the healthcare system, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, the Poole Institute for Health lives within Lehigh Valley Health Network with the mission that we are aiming to improve health for all residents of the Lehigh Valley. And that means that we need to think about all components of health. The healthcare system provides a lot of great services and care for our patients, but we know that most people spend most of their time outside of the healthcare system. And so what are all the other things that are impacting their health on their day-to-day basis? And how do we work across sectors? So not only with the healthcare system, but also with schools and businesses and residents and nonprofits to all think about how we're collectively impacting that health over time.
An example that comes to mind that I think many people can relate to is asthma. And allergies,
yes,
in the Lehigh Valley especially are really bad. And I think about what affects a person that they are suffering from asthma. And one of those things can be the housing conditions
Absolutely.
That they're living in. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. So when someone's diagnosed with asthma, they receive a lot of instructions from the healthcare system. And so we have interventions where community health workers or outreach workers will work with families on medication and medication management and making sure that that is happening correctly. But the longer term investment is ensuring that the environment is healthy and those triggers are being decreased. And so that might be what's happening in the home, what's happening in the school or wherever they're spending most of their time, and also the air and the like outdoor air that they're breathing as well and how much that can trigger it. So being able to get more upstream, we say, right, getting more preventative and decreasing those triggers or addressing those pieces can be a longer term investment in health over time and decrease it for the whole population, not just that individual.
And decrease the need for going into the hospital receiving care.
Exactly. Right? Okay. Exactly.
Great. Anything else that you want to point out with any of these seven different vital conditions?
No, I think just to reiterate that it's not new things that we're looking at. We've been looking at housing and education and food access for a long time. We know these are important components of health. The vital conditions framework is really a way to organize the way that we think about it more as opposed to introducing new topics or new drivers of health. And so I think it just is a way for us to have some new shared language that can help connect all the pieces that impact health.
And to get in front of these things.
Yes.
So we're not relying on emergency services for food access and housing access, that we're working on how do we build that in so it's not an emergency need.
That's right. Theoretically, if we invest in those longer-term preventative solutions that create thriving, the need for the emergency services would go down over time, right? So if we are only thinking about emergency services and urgent needs today, then we're not setting up our future generations for success. And so it's about thinking, balancing that with investments in long-term sustainable solutions that will change systems, change communities, and create more opportunity for health.
Strengthening the dam instead of just plugging your hole.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. You can come up with all kinds of
metaphors
analogies.
For it.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Sam, what is it that you particularly like about this framework as a way of thinking about and organizing our efforts to invest in the health of the community?
There's a few things that stand out to me about this framework in particular. I've had the opportunity to learn from and utilize lots of different frameworks over the years, and there's always something new that each one brings. But I think the vital conditions and the well-being portfolio overall does a couple of things really well. First, it incorporates all the things in a community that someone needs to thrive. So it's not just isolating one or two, but thinking about what are all of the components that are needed? How are we being holistic in our way of thinking about that? And not only does it create room for all of them, but that it also really acknowledges the intersection of these things. You can't really isolate food access without thinking about meaningful work and wealth, right? The solution to food insecurity over time is ensuring that people have the resources they need to be able to purchase food for them and their families, which also then ties to education and the education system and educational opportunities that people have. So I like that the vital conditions thinks about how these things layer on one another and intersect and not trying to sort of separate them out necessarily into separate components. And I think it also highlights that it's not just an individual's health behaviors or actions that matter, but also the community that they are living within. And so it gives space for how people have opportunities in front of them within the community that they are growing up in, spending most of their time in, live in, etc. So it makes us all accountable for health over time. We all contribute to it. It's not about figuring out what is causing what, but really thinking about how can we all contribute to a future that we want to be a part of. And the individuals and residents obviously are at the center of that we're serving. And the last big thing is that it's actionable. It leads us to think about what we can do today. It calls for us each to view ourselves as stewards, which is the language that they use. So how are we all contributing to that success? And recognizing that we are all needed in that and that we are all part of the solution. And so it pushes us to think systemically and more upstream and coming up with sustainable solutions that help a lot of people at one time. Mm. Margaret, you've been hearing about the vital conditions framework from myself and our conversations as we've been talking with different guests. What are your initial reactions as you've been learning about this way of thinking and this organizing framework?
I think it's a level of understanding that I've been very involved in community and in a lot of nonprofits over the years that are dealing with some of these issues, the emergency kind of response things. So it's given me a level of understanding of, well, how do you prevent this stuff from ever being needed in the first place? Mm-hmm. And it frames it in a very nice, easy to understand way. Yeah, I think it gives people language that they can understand and they can put into context. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's really what I like about this show, about doing this and talking about these topics, because it's just, it's a different way of looking at community need mm-hmm. and why community is so important. And that's just always been really important to me. Mm-hmm. So it's learning those things and then being able to share that with other people that I think is really meaningful.
I think for nonprofits, if you're an individual nonprofit trying to address a social need, it can feel very overwhelming,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
You see the need, and the need is only growing all the mm-hmm. time. And so you feel like you're pushing a boulder uphill a little bit as you are working really hard to address this for a whole group or a whole population. But often we're in it alone, or, you know, the need is bigger than we could really ever serve. We see this in the housing space, in the mental health services space. Mm-hmm. So I think that this also can help reframe and think about the ways that we are building on assets or helping to prevent things downstream from happening, which can, in the long term, help those individual nonprofits, help individual groups who are trying to meet those needs on a daily basis and keep up with that demand.
Right, right. It's trying to fix some of the root causes.
Yes. Goes a bit deeper.
Yeah. Yeah, I know I've told this story before, but I think it's applicable to what you're talking about. And to give like an example of, you know, that 1996 snowstorm, if we had only cared about our little spot of, mm-hmm. of the alley, mm-hmm. that would have only benefited us. Mm-hmm. But if we all worked together, it benefited everybody in our neighborhood around us because mm-hmm. that allowed everybody to have access.
That's right.
So that's why we all got out there and shoveled.
Yep.
Even though it was beyond our sidewalk space.
Yep.
So how can we talk about what do we see, or are you seeing any sort of changes from the federal level?
Yeah, we don't know yet. The answer to that is okay. a little bit. But I think the need for us to work together is going to become even more. Ultimately, everyone wants the opportunity to have a successful life, right? That's what everyone's goal is. Mm-hmm. And our way forward in that is that we're going to have to think about how we're each contributing to the success around us, of our neighborhood, of our city, of our county, of our state, and of our country. And so tying that from what you do on a day-to-day basis in your own world and your own environment, those things add up, right? It's the ripples that happen. You plus another person plus another person plus another person, that creates lots of interactions, lots of ripples, lots of ways that change can happen on a small scale and on a big scale, but also on the opportunities that you might have access to, but it also might help other people have access to. And so we live in a society where we are connected to one another. There's nothing that can change that. And so we need to think about how we want to each play a role in that. And by trying to isolate or point to individual causes of things, it doesn't allow us to embrace the complexity that happens when you look at the whole picture. And so I think that is where our conversations will continue to go as we think about changes that might happen at a federal or a state level or a local level. How do things add up together? And we always say, like, the sum is greater than the parts that make it up, right? And what is that sum? And how do we all recognize that? One way or another, you're contributing to it. And so you can choose to steward it in whatever direction you would like. But we are inextricably tied to one another. And our outcomes are tied together, too. That
right.
means.
Right. So one of the topics we've talked about on every episode, I think, at least last year, is Franklin Park. Mm-hmm. And that's a neighborhood in Allentown that is where a lot of your work is being based right now, as sort of the pilot. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate description?
Yeah. Yes. We are working with communities, right? And so the first community that we are partnering with is the Franklin Park community in Allentown. It is the area between 7th Street, where the redevelopment in Allentown is, down to 17th Street, where LVHN's 17th Street Hospital is. And in that area, it's about 10,000 residents and about 3,500 homes.
Mm. So we'll continue to talk about Franklin Park and the work that's being done there on this show.
We are just getting started, for sure. That'll still be a part of the conversation. And that will not change under the well-being report, and I think actually gives us a chance to really highlight some good work around the vital conditions that we can see happening in real time.
And as we're talking about Franklin Park, let's revisit this definition of place-based approach that is being used right now. So talk a little bit about what that place-based approach is.
Sure. So when we think about changing things like housing or food access or educational outcomes over large geographic areas, it can be really hard to wrap our head around. And we know that most of what impacts someone is the things that are happening in their neighborhood right around them. So place-based for us really means taking a geography and thinking about that holistically. And what are all the components that are needed within that given geography? And that could be a neighborhood. It could be two neighborhoods. You know, that can change. But place-based means grounding the solutions and the interventions that we have in the local context first, making sure that it's appropriate for that community, for the residents that are there, and that it meets their needs. But then even more than that, it means layering things on together in the same place. So any initiative can be place-based if it is designed for and contextualized to a specific community. But really embracing being place-based means that we are looking and addressing all of the different components of health in the same place so that it is providing greater opportunity for all those who are living there.
So that's, for an example, to bring it back to the seven vital conditions, that's making sure that there's food, grocery store, access to bread and milk and those staples within walking distance.
Exactly.
Because you're still talking, then you have the transportation.
That's
like
right.
Not everybody is going to have access to a car, their own car. So how can they get to the doctor, right? The grocery store for food.
Yep. Do they have green space to or a park to be in or walking paths or, you know, spaces that are meant for people to gather and be in? Are there other sorts of amenities in that local community? Are there businesses that are there that are helping that neighborhood thrive? So all of the things that we need for individuals to be able to access and that make a community work. Place-based means thinking about all of those components and not just isolating one of them.
Right. And I'm glad you brought up the nature and green space. There was a seminar or workshop, I guess, that you held, your group held. And one of the exercises they put us through, I went and I attended that because, you know, I'm trying to learn this stuff. So we have this show. But I distinctly remember that exercise was to close your eyes and think about what you used to see in the place where you grew up. And the person that I was sitting with, we had to exchange our examples after, and we both lived in Allentown. Just I lived on the south side and he lived in the downtown. And his answer was so different from mine, even though we lived miles apart. His was, I see concrete, I see drugs, I see people drinking and smoking on the street. And mine was, I see trees, yards, yard with a pool, and I see a park. And I go to that park every day. That was part of my everyday. And how does that shape
exactly
who you are? And how does that play into your overall health as you're growing up?
And that happens implicitly and explicitly, right? There's a piece of that where you knew that you were going to that park and doing these things. And there are ways that now you look back and you're like, oh, I didn't even realize that those things were impacting me on the day-to-day basis. And I never even thought about it because it's just part of your environment, right? It's part of the physical environment that you spend your time in.
Right. So let's change off a little bit here and talk about what's coming up. So the next episode, we're going to dive deeper into basic needs for health and safety, which is one of the seven vital conditions. And in doing so, we're going to talk about a new exciting Blue Zones initiative in Allentown. Give us a little brief explanation of the Blue Zone.
Sure. Yeah, we're looking forward to kicking off this year's season with looking at some of the components that go into basic needs for health and safety. And part of that is food access. And one of the big ways that we are trying to take some new approaches in the food access space is through the Blue Zones initiative. So Blue Zones looks at what they call the built environment, so the physical space around us, and how does that promote health in ways that maybe we don't notice as much. So talking about that more implicit piece, right? How do you nudge people into health behaviors that are beneficial to them in the long term? How do you make it easier for people to make the healthy choice? Having healthy foods around as the main option, making sure people have things that are accessible and affordable to them in terms of food, making sure there is space for physical activity and exercise in communities, and thinking about alcohol and tobacco components. And so they're focused on some policy changes that can help improve those things here for residents of the Lehigh Valley. And we're excited to have Brooke Griffiths, the executive director, on with us to share a little bit more about where they are in the process of getting that started and what we're hoping Blue Zones will be able to bring to the Valley.
Policy changes. What kind of policy change would we be looking at for food access?
It's a great question. And this ties back to the place-based piece. When you think about a neighborhood, oftentimes we get the criticism of, well, if you're just focusing on one neighborhood, are you creating large-scale change? And the answer is the way that we do this is by systems change and policy changes. And so by focusing in one area, the root causes, as you start to get to those root causes, it's really thinking about what are the systemic barriers that are in the way of people being able to access a service, access something that's beneficial to their health, take advantage of an opportunity. And that often ties back to our larger systems and the policies that are in place that either prevent or enable certain things from happening. And so policy changes in the food space might be thinking about where grocery stores can be or what kind of things that they can hold there, or urban planning, like where things are in geography to one another. It's enabling pathways for healthy food access to come into spaces. Mm-hmm. And so you'll hear a lot of that place-based theme through Blue Zones work as well. By focusing on neighborhoods and places, you then eventually get to this idea that if we really want to create sustainable change, we're going to have to change the way our systems work. So how do you interact with a healthcare system or government systems or school systems and their policies internally and how they, you know, ask people to interact with them, or our policies that sort of govern the way that we have access to things in the environments that we live.
Hmm. Okay, so it could be some zoning.
Absolutely.
Looking at zoning changes that might allow for a small grocery store
yep.
to be built in a neighborhood where yep. it's all now zoned residential.
Right, gotcha. Exactly.
Gotcha. Well, that concludes this episode of the newly named Health Beat to the Wellbeing Report. Thank you, Samantha. It's always great to have these discussions with you. I look forward to the remainder of this year.
Thank you for having me. This is going to be a great year.
Yes. If you would like to listen to this program again, please go to our website, wdiy.org, the WDIY app where the Wellbeing Report is archived, or your favorite podcast or smart speaker platform. I'm your co-host, Margaret McConnell, along with Samantha Schack. Have a great evening.
This has been the Wellbeing Report on WDIY. Thank you for listening. This episode and others are archived and available online at lppih.org and on wdiy.org, and also can be accessed on your favorite podcast streaming platform.